Hiring is challenging, and it used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter. In fact, go to ZipRecruiter.com/begin. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. And they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you cannot miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Right now, listeners here can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/begin. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEGIN. ZipRecruiter.com/begin. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Flying V Anaheim Ducks podcast here on the Believe Podcast Network. On the Believe Podcast Network, Southern California's number one sports podcast network, the only place for the show for every team in Southern California and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? So yeah, on this week's show, it's me and Kent again talking remotely. Both of us, it's a late night episode, but how you doing, Kent?
Good. Yeah, Anthony, thanks. Yeah. I know, another late one. This is kind of getting to be our MO.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always seem to have some technical problems, but I think we're going well right now. So hopefully it continues to work out. But today on the show, we're going to recap the games from this week. That includes the game against Winnipeg. That was a loss. The win in the shootout against Minnesota. The loss to the Kings and the win tonight against the Rangers, which was a very exciting game. We'll also talk three stars, and in this three stars, we're going to go over the most surprising trades that Kent experienced firsthand, and I'll just tell you the trades I was most surprised by in my time as an NHL fan. But first, we're going to get to a little bit of an ad. This is something new this week, but we're going to start doing ads. So the first one, let's talk about sleep. Listen to these studies from Harvard and Johns Hopkins. Chronic sleep deprivation has been shown to lead to depression, diabetes, obesity, and cardiovascular disease. We need 8 hours of sleep. I know I've got a newborn. I struggle every night. I don't get 8 hours of sleep. And one of sleep's biggest problems is temperature. When my room's too hot, I have trouble sleeping. It's tough to get a good night's sleep when you're hot. I want to tell you about Pod by 8 Sleep. The Pod by 8 Sleep is a high-tech bed designed specifically to help you achieve optimal sleep fitness. It was developed by leading sleep researchers after tracking 43 million hours of sleep. It combines dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking to enhance your rest and recovery. It learns your sleep habits and adjusts to the temperature automatically. That means if you like the bed cool, your partner likes the bed warm, now you can have both at the same time in a crazy comfortable bed. Sleep longer and deeper so you wake up refreshed and ready to take on the world. Try the Pod for 100 nights, and if you don't love it, we'll refund your purchase and arrange a free pickup. They've already sold out of their first two batches, so they're going fast. For a limited time, get $150 off your purchase when you go to 8sleep.com/pro. That's E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com/pro, 8sleep.com/pro. So, yep. That's our first ad of the show. How did you like it?
Oh, man, nice. That's actually a good one. I got to check that out. That thing sounds unbelievable.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely could get as much sleep as possible with the newborn. So I totally get why people would want that. But let's talk about this first game, the Winnipeg Jets game. The Ducks lose it. It's a close one. Once again, they definitely had their share of the opportunities, but they just can't pull it out. They can't get the elusive third goal. That seems to be a trend that's been happening lately.
Yeah, I remember that was kind of as I was my last couple of years in the league. We had I was fortunate to play for some good coaches, and they always talked about the race to three in kind of the modern NHL. A lot of nights, that's kind of the magic number. So yeah, when you kind of get stuck on two. It's a tough spot to be. You're probably it's probably not going to do it on most nights. Might be enough to get you overtime a decent amount of the time if your defensive game's tight and you're getting top end goaltending, but I think long term it's not a good recipe for success. You can't get past two, but I think that's a tough building to play in. Winnipeg, played there a few times, always challenging. One of the tougher places to play in the NHL. And I think, again, broken record, but I thought the Ducks played well. Another solid performance. Definitely weren't getting run out of the building or anything like that. I think going down early hurts, but bouncing back and being 1-1 after one on the road, I think visiting team, you'd usually take that, as well as carrying that into the rest of the game. 2-2 with 10 minutes to go, you're a pretty good spot, at least in decent shape to have a good chance of getting a point on the road, which is always nice for sure, to at least get one and a chance at two. But then it came down to basically a special teams competition, power play versus power play. Winnipeg got one, and the Ducks couldn't get one. So that was, in a nutshell, that's what kind of boiled down to for me. I think I, having seen the Winnipeg Jets when they were here earlier in the season, it's like a much improved team. They're just, I think a lot of the pieces are still the same, but they just look to be playing a lot better. Like cleaner brand of hockey, and Hellebuyck looked significantly better than he did early on in the season. It was a good performance by him.
Absolutely, and I think you can kind of see, we talked a lot about how the Ducks are in most games, but you can kind of see, if you look at where they are in the standings, they're down towards the bottom now, only a couple points ahead of Chicago for that eighth spot in the Western Conference and three ahead of the Kings. But compared to those two teams, they only have pretty much a minus 10 goal differential. So they've given up 10 more goals against than they've scored this season, compared to the Blackhawks and Kings, who are up around 20, minus 20. So they have been close. You can tell there are a lot of one-goal games. The overtime games haven't gone their way, but they've done all right in shootouts. But when you, as a former player, when you've been in those situations and your team's been having trouble scoring, what does that effect have on you mentally? Does it? I mean, people use the term gripping your stick a little harder, trying to be perfect. But what is it that really mentally affects you about that situation? How do you get out of it?
Yeah, I think there's definitely times when frustration tends to kick in a little bit when the pucks aren't going in. Like, you kind of know that you're playing well, that you're executing, everyone's working hard, but in the end, it's a results-oriented business. These sports and. That's basically, if you're doing 95% of everything right and to the best of your ability and feel like you're playing well as a team, to kind of have nothing to show for it, kind of the longer that goes on, the more frustrating it can be. And yeah, it can lead to, like squeezing the stick. Yeah, that's definitely the term of choice. And I think that basically just equates to kind of like, you're pressing, and hockey's such a kind of reaction-oriented, reactionary game that the minute you start pressing and trying to force things, and you know, you kind of have a certain idea of what you want to do and trying to force that to happen rather than reacting what's open, what's available, and plays to be made on the ice, so on and so forth. So, it can definitely turn into lengthy losing streaks or just kind of some tough stretches for hockey teams, especially when things are amplified so much with all the coverage these days. Everyone knows what everyone else is going through, and it's not fun.
Yeah. And moving on kind of with that, in that vein, to the Minnesota game, it's the one game this week the Ducks jumped out to an early lead off of goals from Ricard Raquel and Cam Fowler. They get the early 2-0 lead. Cam Fowler scores the first power play goal by a Ducks defenseman this whole season. So Jonathan Davis's point last week kind of had the we won't use the term from our other favorite podcast, Spit and Chicklets, but the Jonathan Davis boost, we'll call it, after mentioning the lack of goals scored by Ducks defensemen on the power play. So Cam Fowler breaks the ice there. The Ducks get out to a lead, which, like I mentioned, is the first time they did that all week and the only time they did that all week, and they get a win. Can you talk about what it's like playing from ahead versus playing from behind? I know teams change the way they play when they have a lead. They get a little more conservative and kind of battened down. But what does it feel like to play in a game like that where you're finally, you've got the lead, you're trying to hold on, and you can dictate the way you play?
Yeah, I think it definitely allows you to – I know people hate it when you talk about sitting back and everyone wants to be aggressive all the time, but – when you're aggressive, you kind of open yourself up to more mistakes. And when you can kind of, I don't know, at least not have to press and force things and open yourself up, kind of like a chess game, if you will. Like, you don't have to kind of open things up and open yourself up to the counterattack. Hockey's so transition focused, and teams are so good at transitioning off mistakes that you don't have to try and create a scoring chance every time, where sometimes, like, just getting the puck deep is enough, and you can just kind of put it in a safe place, get to the bench, and get a change. I know some people might not like that, but when it's when 2 points are up for grabs and the standings are so tight, or when you're low in the standings trying to creep up and every point means that much, it's time to kind of put the personal stats aside, and getting that lead kind of allows teams to do that. But I think yeah, it was one big star I had for that game, and it was the first win that they've been able to put together in a while. It was Josh Manson's first game back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talked about that one, but.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think that I know I mentioned that a lot about his importance and Hampus's importance, and to see him back after such a tough time away, I think that was a welcome sight and kind of a good boost for the team. Kind of, you could just see they had that jump. I mean, the shots were 19-1 halfway through the game on the road. Like, that is crazy. That, and then to hear the away team fans kind of sarcastically cheering for their own team's second shot, the 10-minute mark through the second period, that was interesting, and just speaks to the level of play that they have been running at lately. I was, but yeah, then a couple of fluky goals, and then you're back to 2-2. So kind of disheartening there, but to be able to pull it together and Gibby makes some good saves down the stretch and shut the door in the shootout and get that second point on the road and get a win, the all-important win, was huge.
Absolutely.
What were your takeaways from that game? Did you see anything else?
Well, I agree with you on Manson. I think that just his presence, he and Lindholm kind of getting back consistently into playing. You're noticing there haven't been any more 5 or 6 spots put up against the Ducks anymore since kind of the end of November. You had that streak where it was 5-2 against the Capitals, 5-4 against the Panthers, 6-2 against the Lightning. And then Lindholm comes back towards the end of November and you're down to a 3 or 4 goals allowed. And now Manson's back this week and you've got you haven't given up more than 3 goals in a game. So you can definitely see the effect of having their top pairing back in the lineup on defense. I think that's huge. I also, kind of going back to the topic of struggling to score sometimes, I wonder, because once again, they get a 2-goal lead against Minnesota and they cough it up. They're able to win this time. Luckily, they weren't last time. But is that also a byproduct of struggling to score when you get that lead early and you're maybe putting too much pressure on yourself to try to hold it versus to try to be more aggressive?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you don't see a team like Colorado, for instance, like worrying too much about that or adjusting their pace of play, regardless of what the score is. I mean, they could be down two or they could be up two. They're just still getting after it and just kind of full speed ahead. But yeah, I think it's when you've had a tough stretch like that. Yeah, that definitely. When you get a 2-goal lead, there's definitely that tendency that kind of creeps in the back of your mind, like, okay, let's to a certain level, like, let's not mess this up, like, let's make sure we take this home. And you know, it was just some kind of fluky goals that came in. But one other thing that I wanted to talk about on, I believe, was the Ducks' first goal. I like seeing when GMs and coaches do this, kind of having been, I don't know, at a bunch of different, places in the lineup and organizationally in the minors and everything, basically haven't been everywhere up and down the depth chart. I love seeing it when a GM brings a veteran guy up from the minors, like a Sam Carrick. And, there's some familiarity there with Eakins from previous organizations. But just to bring a guy like that up and to have him out there with Raquel and Silverberg on a line, and just kind of, I think it just sets a good tone. It's a boost for the lineup, too. But, like, organizationally, too, guys from the minors see that here's a veteran guy who's doing things the right way. He carries himself, a great pro, and they bring him up and he gets rewarded. And I think that sets a good tone of what you're all about from top to bottom. And to see him kind of come in and just a simple kind of KG veteran play, just coming down the wall at the blue line, the kick out to him, not really having any speed, but just a classic savvy play, just the old pass off the pads, they call it, when you just fire it right at the goalie's pads, and it just kind of leaves room for them to misplay it, and which you saw, I think it was a young goalie Minnesota had in, and just kind of booted it, but didn't get it into the corner, and just kind of left it close enough to the net where you saw a nice net front pass and a tap-in goal to kind of get things rolling. So that was a neat little point there in that game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for mentioning Carrick, because I wanted to talk about him too. He looked great in that game with that assist. He was physical. He was involved in the offense a lot, had his nose right in front of the net pretty frequently. So I really thought that he played well, and he earned himself another game the next day. I believe in the next game against the Kings, he was back in the lineup again, I think playing on the same line. So very good job by Carrick. It was great to see also Eakins. You mentioned the familiarity he has with him, but this wasn't necessarily something he saw as a gamble, putting Carrick up right there. And speaking of gambling, it's an exciting time for sports. Sophomore sensation Lamar Jackson is redefining what it means to be a dual threat QB. Odds on Jackson to win the MVP race were 50-1 to begin the season and have plummeted since, making MyBookie's prop selection more attractive than ever. Then on the 14th, we have one of the most stacked UFC cards in a long time. That is tonight, believe it or not. Three championship fights, all highly anticipated, right in betting capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Without a doubt, people are going to be looking to get in on the action, and we have the best place for you to go, MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. MyBookie has more lines and better odds for the player than any other sportsbook around. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. All you have to do is use our promo code BLV to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code capital B, capital L, capital V to get your cash from MyBookie. Bet, win, get paid. So now let's continue on. That's the second ad of our...
Wow, okay.
I think I nailed that one.
Smooth ad read and a smooth a smoother segue. Nice. That was great.
Thinking out. That's why you go to, that's what they encourage in elementary school, critical thinking.
Wow. Well played. Well done.
But anyway, now that we've got those two ads out of the way, let's talk about this Rangers, the Kings and the Rangers game. First of all, the Kings, Ducks go down early, but they battle back. The thing that stood out to me, I think, obviously, was the Delorier-McDermid fight. That was absolutely a heavyweight match for the ages. That thing was intense. Did you get a chance to watch that?
Yeah, what a scrap, man. And I guess Drew Doughty had some pretty poignant, some great comments after the game. I mean, I thought, or they asked him about it. I don't know if it was intermission or post game, but I think it was intermission, and they asked him about it on the Kings broadcast. And his response was great. And I think the question was, what do you like with a fight like that? I know it's kind of making its way out of the game, and like, what were your thoughts on that? What did that mean to you guys? And I think he just got to hit the nail on the head as far as the hockey community is concerned, or a bulk of the hockey community. I know not everyone's going to agree all the time, but I think in a situation like that, like, obviously no one getting hurt, I think, is the main thing, which is kind of the, like, no one ever wants to see that happen, and have a spirited bout like that with everyone coming out okay. And yeah, it was just a great fight. It just added a lot to the game. Like, gave both sides a lift. I think Doughty was saying how much it meant to their team, and there was a lot of other good stuff that went on in the game for them, but he kind of wanted to go back to that, and so that specifically was great. Always a hit on the in between periods and on the bench, and just gets everyone fired up. And he just, I think, the question was asking what he thought kind of about the fight, and the comment was about it being gradually kind of being phased out or leaving the sport. And he just kind of said, it can't leave the sport. Like, we need fighting. And I think that's what the byproduct of having no fighting would be. You would have a whole new breed of cheap shot artists running around, like, not diving at guys' knees, but I mean, at least sticking knees out or elbows or butt ending or just running around doing stupid stuff out there when there's no repercussion. It's amazing. Guys know they don't have to pay a price, or no one's going to call them on anything. It's amazing the stuff you can start to see happen out there on the ice. But it's kind of the sport's way of policing itself. And when you know that there's a chance you're going to have to face something or face someone that you might not want to, if you do things kind of out of hand, then I don't know. It's just so unique to hockey. And I know, like, some people don't like it and injuries are terrible, but I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to get some numbers on the percentage of hockey fights where guys are actually injured versus the flying full speed elbows with no disregard for, with no fear of anything happening or regard for, you know, any honor or any kind of thing like that. So I don't know. That was my take on it. But as far as the game, yeah, I think it was a hard fought game, difficult kind of tight checking, but yeah, that was the highlight for me. What were your thoughts?
Well, that fight, I mean, was the highlight for me as well. I think the interesting thing was, I saw on Twitter, I didn't notice at first, that Delorier told McDermid to keep his helmet on, which was, I mean, that's such a a microcosm, I think, of the sport and kind of the code of fighting in general. Like, he tells the guy to keep it because McDermott was going motioning to take his helmet off. And that's a two-minute penalty. So, I mean, maybe you could argue that the smart thing would have been for Delorier to let him take his helmet off and earn the Ducks a power play. But I wonder if the refs might have broken up the fight at that point if McDermott had taken off his helmet. But then they just kept the helmet on and started absolutely chucking him. And like you said, I think it's good for the sport as well. I mean, I don't agree with the people who say that fighting needs to be completely eliminated. And I'm pretty much in lockstep with what you're saying, that it needs to be done to police the game. And I mean, coming from someone who's experienced it firsthand, like you, I think all those anti-hockey or anti-fighting hockey fans, should kind of look into, do their own research project about, I'd be interested to see how many suspensions and games suspended have occurred in the NHL this season compared to fighting majors, just because I really do think that it probably keeps the suspensions down, because if someone cheap shots your guy and you can't get back at him by fighting, then you're going to have to do something else. So it probably, it spirals.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
The other thing I noticed specifically about the Kings game, Derek Grant gets another goal, which puts him pretty much at his second best season, on pace to have his best season of his career, and already has him at his second best season of his career, which I think is pretty interesting, because it's you look at Derek Grant's career, you see how much he's moved around already, you see the different teams he played for, going up and down from the AHL to the NHL back a few years ago. His two best seasons have come when he's had the most NHL time and he's played in one spot and hasn't been traded. And both those seasons happen to have come with the Ducks. And him being a free agent this season, I wonder, did you ever experience in your career a time where you were pretty much had a career best performance and you're going into your free agent year and you're looking to kind of, if not cash in, kind of get your chance at a little bit of a bidding war going on or anything like that? Because I think that's what Derek Grant's in for this offseason.
Yeah, and I think as a player, I don't know, it's hard to kind of, I guess, word it correctly, but I mean, there's always the money side of it's always important, but the human side of it's just as important with a lot of guys. Like I did have that happen, because the summer after we won the cup, I was actually a free agent. The summer I won the cup with the Ducks, I was a free agent that summer. And like, we were just all kind of in celebration mode, so there wasn't a lot of time to think about contracts or anything like that. Like, through the playoffs, we were just kind of so focused on the task at hand. And I think we even talked with Bob Murray, my agent, and I, kind of over the course of the playoffs, we wanted to start talking about next year. And yeah, we just said, no, like, this is like, I just want to totally focus on where we're at right now and just kind of focus all my attention here. And that was just kind of the right thing for me. I know some guys can kind of do things hand in hand, but for me, that was the right choice. So it just kind of left me after I winning the cup. I was going to be a free agent July 1st, but it was almost like I just spent 5.5 years in the minors, and the Ducks are the team that finally gave me my opportunity, and it was a real opportunity. And just the way things turned out, and like getting to play side by side with the guys I was playing with and have that experience and learn from them and about hockey, and just being that close to that level of greatness and quality of human being, it's kind of, you can't put a price tag on that. That's kind of how I felt at the time. So it was just kind of a no-brainer to just kind of re-up with Anaheim, I mean, obviously the fact that we had just won the cup too, it was like sentimentally, everything's at an all-time high. And yeah, it was just kind of a no-brainer to come back. So it's not always about kind of maximizing the dollar value, but I understand guys that do it for sure. And I signed a 2-year deal with the Ducks, and then kind of after that was probably going to be my time to, I don't know, be a little more realistic about entertaining other options and maybe trying to cash in a little more. But I think I took, was thrilled to just stay with Anaheim for another couple of years, regardless of what the salary was going to be. So it's not always, yeah, like I said, it's not always about dollars and maximizing it. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I think it's not like the numbers are a fluke and that he's just gotten lucky. If any, like it's a good indicator of his level of play, I think. And he's had even more chances. He could have more goals, how well he's played. And it's awesome to see. You're happy for a guy like that, especially kind of having been in that journeyman, bouncing around forever, looking for someone to give you that chance. And I think now having a second go around with Anaheim and having it go well again, and having earned this role, the kind of expanded role with the team, I think that'll be a significant factor in it. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But hell, if he keeps going like this, he's going to have some good options. That's the one guarantee.
Agreed. Yeah. And you wondered, like you mentioned, that if he's going to have some loyalty to the Ducks because they've given him the best opportunity and he's succeeded the most while he's played here. So, I mean, if I were him, and not having any inside knowledge, obviously, I would absolutely consider the Ducks offer with the most seriousness out of all of them I got if I were in that situation. Moving on to the Ranger game, I think this by far was the best game of the week. Back and forth, up and down, fast game. The Ducks look dangerous offensively. What were your impressions of today's game?
Yeah, it got off to we were just talking about this a little bit. Definitely got off to a quick start. It's kind of, yeah, a lot of back and forth. But yeah, that first play, just 10 minutes in, just kind of a fluky play. It looked like a crazy turnover, but it was actually a deflected pass off of, I think it was Manson trying to pass, and it went off Getzlaf's stick and wound up on Zibanejad's tape, who was just skating in. So it was just kind of, yeah, it was so fast. When things are playing at that speed, there's going to be some weird bounces and some turnovers. But yeah, it was a great hockey game. But to go down to rip that early and then have to fight back. But yeah, I thought they did a great job, the Ducks, of coming back and generating some great chances and looked fast and were playing hard. And yeah, it was a great game to watch. What else? The one thing I did notice was on the Ducks' second goal, that kind of just another kind of scrambly play, just seemed like a symptom of how things were moving out there. But when Lundqvist almost wound up in the corner and then kind of had to kind of swim back, and then the puck kind of filtered through like three sets of legs right on Gudbranson's tape, and he was able to fire. That was a good shot, like fired a great shot. To find that daylight in the open net. But yeah, just a kind of a little more chaotic game, but just speed, speed, speed. So those are fun. And then another all the way to the shootout. Did you see anything else during the game you want to mention?
Yeah, I mean the power play is really starting to click. This is the third consecutive game they've scored a power play goal with Silverberg's little redirect he had there. So looks like so the tweaking's finally working on the power play with Derek Grant out there on the power, at least one of the power play units. So that's definitely a good sign for the Ducks. And going back to that good Branson goal, I saw that. I was really impressed with. I was a little bit distracted when the goal was first scored. And then I looked up. It sounded just like a tap in from point blank range. But then I looked up and he put it in from the blue line, kind of on a. He kind of contorted himself to get that one time shot. And I was impressed with that. I thought maybe Silverberg tipped it, but they gave Gabranson the goal. So good for him. He's doing well, definitely fitting into the Ducks roster. People have noted how well he looks now paired with Fowler back on defense. So I'm happy for Gabranson that he's finding himself here in Anaheim as he did in Pittsburgh before he was traded. So good things for Gabranson as well.
Yeah, I think that's a good complimentary pair. I think it makes a lot of sense. Like thinking about it now, like, yeah, I think that's a great kind of, they just both do different things so well and both just kind of, yeah, complements each other. So that's been fun to watch. And then Lindholm's his first of the year. On a bomb through that kind of trickled through Lindholm, but I always admire this from this guy, and I think he's got to be the best on the team, and I think one of the best in the league is a strong word, but he's definitely up there. Like it's a really good skill. It's not easy to do, but the way Ricard Raquel is able to kind of gather speed to the neutral zone and beat guys one-on-one. It's just to beat guys in one-on-one in the NHL is so hard. I mean, it's, and he makes it look easy to kind of be able to enter the attacking zone with speed and get that penetration into the offensive zone with speed and kind of gives you options to kick it out to either side, but just to be able to beat that one guy and kind of maintain your speed attacking through the neutral zone is, gives you good options coming into the offensive zone and helps create things. And I just, yeah, he's always so good at that. I always noticed that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more impressive things that I agree with that I see any player in the NHL do. If you can beat someone one-on-one, because at that level, I mean, you learn to take the body as a defenseman very, very early on and where to look on an opponent's body to not get fooled and walked across the ice. So if someone still is elusive enough to kind of lull you into a false sense of security and then blow by you like Raquel has been able to do, that is a hard thing to do at the NHL level.
Yeah, big respect for that. Gina, is there anything else you wanted to talk about before the three stars?
No, I think the Lindholm goal was the last point I guess I'll make is the Lindholm scoring. Like we mentioned earlier, he gets the game winner. The game tying goal, excuse me, with the goalie Gibson coming out of the net pretty much simultaneously. That goes to show again how valuable those two guys are, Lindholm and Manson, are on the back end there for the Ducks. But yeah, let's talk about the three stars. So today's three stars, most surprising trades that you experienced firsthand. And so I was thinking in your case, guys who you were kind of blindsided by hearing, like maybe at the trade deadline or early in the season, like, oh, this guy, no, I just got traded. I'm off to another city. Did you have any of those situations playing?
Yeah. It was pretty, it all basically happened in one season. It was, so 2006 to 2007, we win the cup. 2007-2008, we had a lot of the same pieces together and put together a great season and finished high in the standings. And then we lost in the first round to Dallas. It's a disappointing end to that season, but it happens. It happens. It's so tough to go on the playoff run. It's always hard to get out of the first round, especially. So definitely not the first team to get upset in the first round. But the following season was just kind of it was a tough season. A lot of stuff didn't go right. We had a lot of injuries. And then, yeah, it was just, we could just never really get it going. And then I was hurt basically from Christmas on. So I was just kind of doing rehab on my ankle. And I think Sammy Paulson was out, like a lot of, yeah, we just had a lot of man games lost that year. And, just kind of kept waiting and hoping to kind of turn the corner. Just didn't happen. So then, I think it was maybe 2 weeks before trade deadline was, speaking of, Spittin' Chiclets mentioned earlier, but, the Whitney Kunitz trade, I think, was a big shocker. I think in the, you could see that it was just kind of more of a positional move that both organizations thought they needed to kind of shore or maybe a little rich in one area and had to shore up a little area somewhere else. So forward for a defenseman, two good players for sure. And Tony was such a big part of the Ducks for while he was here, definitely just kind of heart and soul guy. And yeah, just a phenomenal player. And I mean, look at the career he went on to have after he left here. My God, like crazy what he was able to do. And that would be my first one. And then the other two were, I was leaving the rink. And I think, I was from, we're leaving Honda Center. I just finished rehabbing my ankle, and a bunch of us were rehabbing injuries and heading home. And then all of our phones started ringing, and it was, all the agents were calling. And I think, it was the first one I saw was, I believe it was, Sammy Paulson getting traded to Columbus, which was another, such a huge part of the Ducks team that won the Cup with Rob Niedermeyer and Travis Mullen. I'll talk more about in a second. But, I think I was either down in the dressing room or walking out of Honda Center or something with Sammy or something, or I just saw him and then just saw that he got traded. But there was some kind of close proximity. I know it's like over a decade ago now, but seeing him getting traded to Columbus and just kind of being in disbelief. But I think everyone was free agents too coming at the end of that year, so that had a little bit to do with it as well. Mm-hmm. But they knew they weren't going to be able to keep everyone. And it was just kind of the writing was on the wall a little bit in hindsight, but it's always kind of shocking in the moment. And then I remember like 10 minutes later, my phone starts ringing and I'm what? And it was my agent and informed me that I just got traded to San Jose. And then, I talked to Bob Murray a little bit, and just kind of obviously owe down a debt of gratitude him and Berkey and Randy and all those guys who gave me my chance. I mean, the only thing I could say was thank you for my opportunity to those guys and for the years with the Ducks team and giving my chance. And going up to San Jose, I didn't aside from playing there, I didn't know much about the area or I think I knew maybe one guy on the team, but, I was hurt. So I wasn't really playing anyway. So I didn't really think I would be traded because I hadn't played since Christmas, but, I ended up getting traded as package deal with Travis. So then I was talking to Travis the other day and heard he got traded too. So I was just, that one day, all three were in one day. So it was pretty, pretty wild time, but yeah, all part of the business, and you know, we'll all kind of be connected by that Cup team forever, regardless of where we all went after. Anyways, but yeah, it was all good stuff in the end.
Yeah, I'm curious. I looked up that history, that trade day on NHL Trade Tracker, and that March 4th, 2009 was quite the busy day for Bob Murray. So yeah, like you mentioned, you and Travis Moen went to San Jose for Nick Bonino and Timo Pielmeyer. Sammy Paulson, Logan Stephenson went to the Blackhawks for
just for
like 13 games the rest of that season, and then he went to Columbus the next day or the next next season. And then for James Wisniewski. And then Petteri Nokelainen comes to Anaheim from Boston for Steve Monador. And then there was it looks like an AHL trade. So man, that must have been a busy day for GMBM, as they like to call him.
Yeah, it was wild. And yeah, the fact that we were all around the rink too, and just like, you know, we were all just hanging out, just literally, you know, you kind of have the monitors in on the room of the NHL network, everyone wants to see what's happening. And it wasn't like we read it. There was no scenarios where like we read it on the ticker that we had gotten traded, but it was just kind of like we were all just together in the dressing room and then left and then found out that we'd all just been traded. So, yeah, I don't know. It was, that was an interesting day for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just go quickly because there were obviously not much of the firsthand experience like you had, but number one for me, I'll go 3-1. So number three for me was Jeff Carter going from Columbus to Dallas, Columbus to Los Angeles. Like the Blue Jackets are tripping both of us up on this exercise. So yeah, just seeing him, I think it was a couple years before that Carter and Richards were on that Flyers team that came back from 3-0 down to the Bruins to win. Those two just seemed like they were so good. And then seeing Richards go to the Kings and then Carter go to the Blue Jackets and then the Kings kind of blew me away, even though I know the Blue Jackets weren't having a good year that year. So I think there was maybe a little bit of I can't really think about who to compare it to, but definitely understand why he was traded. It just surprised me that he ended up back with Richards in Los Angeles.
Right.
Number two was kind of the trade that didn't happen until the next year. It was a Gimla to Pittsburgh instead of a Gimla to Boston. I remember I was at a bar having some drinks with my buddies back home, and I saw the rumors. I was watching the Bruins game. I saw the rumors that Aginla was pretty much definitely going to Boston. And the next morning I woke up to see he was going to Pittsburgh, and that I think it was Ray Shiro at the time ended up swooping in and kind of getting Aginla to come to Pittsburgh. And it wasn't until the next year that the Bruins got him. So, or even 2 years after. So that was an interesting kind of no trade that happened. And then you could probably guess the biggest one. Well, yeah, you can probably guess the biggest one was Tyler Seguin being traded, I think, on the 4th of July of 2013 to Dallas. That was just you did not see that coming, and it happened in such a weird way. Obviously, he didn't perform that well in the Stanley Cup Finals that year. There were rumors kind of surrounding his maturity and having basically someone have to guard him at his hotel room in Toronto when they were playing the Maple Leafs, and girls coming in and out of his room. And the Boston sports media was digging all of this kind of crazy stuff up about Sagan. There was another thing. I think he missed a meeting that year, was late for a meeting, and that made huge headlines in Boston. So it was really interesting to see him traded and the kind of the inside, or not really inside baseball thing that happened, but the Bruins kind of filmed their, it's called Behind the Bee, kind of their 24/7 style documentary that they've been having for a while now. And they had the meeting where they were basically discussing the Sagan trade after he was traded. So you got to see kind of the conference, the conference between all the scouts and Cam Neely and Peter Chiarelli about what they thought of Sagan, and they pretty much threw him under the bus on television.
Wow.
So that was an interesting kind of end to the trade. And then of course it ends up being along with the Joe Thornton trade, one of the most lopsided trades in Bruins history in a negative way. So,
yeah, because who did they get back for him?
They got Louis Erickson. I think they got Louis Erickson was the big piece, and now he's, of course, yeah, weighing down the Canucks. Let's see. I think Frazier, a defenseman. Let's see. I'll just look it up right now. Yeah, seven players. The Bruins got Louis Erickson, Riley Smith, Joe Morrow, Matt Frazier, and the Stars got Rich Peverly, Ryan Button, and Tyler Seguin. Peverly even was such a big role player for that Stanley Cup team the Bruins had. That was also surprising, yeah, to see him go. So that was a surprising day in my life.
yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's gonna do it. Anything else you want to add?
No, that's I think that covers it.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a fun episode 14. We'll see you next week for episode 15. Have a good night. See you later, Kemp.
All right, see you, Anthony. Thanks, guys.
Hiring is challenging, and it used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter. In fact, go to ZipRecruiter.com/begin. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, and they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you cannot miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Right now, listeners here can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/begin. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEGIN. ZipRecruiter.com/begin. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.